This is Puget Sound Now, a closer look at the people and issues across our community. Here's your host, Northwest News Radio's Bill Swartz.
An upcoming general election includes a vote to support a life-saving program.
There is an outstanding paramedic training program located at Harborview and the University of Washington for which our region's paramedics are trained.
King County's Medic One with a national model of success. Who you vote for in local school board elections matters.
We got to learn how to hold everybody accountable who's teaching our children. Nobody get a pass when it comes to children in my mind.
We talk with the founder of the Memphis Lift movement. A strategic alliance supports the iconic Fifth Avenue Theater in downtown Seattle.
It takes so many people, so much effort, so much love for the arts and for, you know, musical theater in general to just keep this going.
Performing artists do what they do best. And when trick-or-treat shopping, don't forget Fido and Fluffy.
Where our customers can pick up an extra can of dog or cat food or pick up some toys or some treats.
The Halloween Pet Food and Supplies Campaign. Hello again, Bill Swartz with a jam-packed Puget Sound Now. Ballots are in the mail. November 4th is a general election in Washington State. While we don't vote for president or Senate, there are many important races. One of them, a vote to continue a property tax levy supporting King County Medic One, a national model helping to save thousands of lives. Every 40 seconds, one person in the United States suffers from a heart attack. But in Seattle, King County, the chances of surviving cardiac arrest are greater because of coordinated care. And there's a new published research to support our life-saving reputation and these coordinated efforts. Stopping by Puget Sound now to talk about it is Dr. Thomas Ray, professor with University of Washington School of Medicine and the medical director for King County Emergency Medical Services. We thank you for your time and this important conversation.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, Dr. Tom, nationally, the survival rate among people who experience an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest is about 10%, according to the American Red Cross. We've known for many years, as I said, we had this reputation that surviving heart attacks in Seattle, King County is greater. This study that's now published in the Journal of American Medical Association hopes to show us locally and nationally to prove that. Is that what it set out to do?
Yes, I think what we were hoping is to take a critical look at our care for this life-threatening condition, cardiac arrest, where the heart stops, blood does not flow, the person becomes unconscious and will die within minutes if action is not taken. And so we wanted to, we know it takes teamwork to resuscitate a patient, to bring them back to life. And this region, King County in particular, has a longstanding reputation of doing this well. And so we wanted to continue to sort of evaluate and see how we were doing and see, most importantly, how we can continue to get better.
How many people were studied? How long a time period was this particular research?
Yes. So we looked at the first 20 years of the century, 2000, 2020, and looked at how patients who suffer cardiac arrest here in King County, how they did, how often they received early bystander CPR, how often an AED that can provide a shock to the heart, how often that was delivered in a timely way, how well the paramedics were able to reestablish a pulse, and how the hospitals provided care thereafter. So over that course of 20 years, there were over 25,000 patients. So it is a common condition. It strikes suddenly and often unexpectedly. And it's a major cause of mortality here in the U.S. and around the world. Patients successively over each five-year period were more and more likely to survive their event. And that's, I think, a tribute to all kinds of folks sort of leaning in and working hard.
What statistics does research show with regard to that immediate help that you spoke of, the use of CPR and the AED machines, the defibrillators?
You know, cardiac arrest where the person becomes suddenly unconscious, it is life-threatening and minutes, even seconds matter. And so the most important initial action is to call 911 and get the process going quickly. Once that happens, the 911 call taker, the dispatcher, can often diagnose on the phone the likelihood of a cardiac arrest. And they can coach the bystander, the community, on how to do CPR in the moment, because we know sometimes the moment is stressful, there's uncertainty, but our emergency communication colleagues are really excellent at understanding the situations and getting bystander CPR started very quickly. That's where you pump the chest. In fact, in this community, the frequency of bystander CPR is upwards of 75%, which is much higher than in most communities here in the United States.
Our guest on Puget Sound Now is Dr. Thomas Ray. He is the medical director of King County Emergency Medical Services. You spoke about the importance of the 911 operators, but how many more people are getting trained with proper CPR in the workplace, in the school areas, to be able to administer CPR?
Yeah, it's a very good question, and I think we don't have the exact answer. Those numbers are somewhat elusive, but what we do know is that Washington State has a requirement that everyone going through school is trained in CPR. So that is a terrific program. Here in King County, there's outreach into the schools. The teachers actually teach the students, usually in middle school and sometimes in high school, how to do CPR, how to recognize and apply an AED, and how to provide that life-saving skill. And it becomes a lifetime skill, right? And then they take it out into the community. Hopefully they talk to their families. And that's one mechanism to make sure everyone is prepared in such an emergency.
But, you know, Doctor, we've had for more than 50 years the Medic One program also in King County. Thanks to Dr. Leonard Cobb and Seattle Fire Chief Gordon Vickery, they trained through Harborview and UW Medical Center, part of the coordinated care. Has that become a national model? Has it gone worldwide?
We are so fortunate that we have the legacy of Dr. Cobb, of Chief Vickery, and the Medic One Foundation now to carry that forward. There is an outstanding paramedic training program located at Harborview and the University of Washington for which our region's paramedics are trained. They emerge from that program with a remarkable set of skills that are challenged and refined even more given the design of the program. And there's close review and physician involvement in the fire departments and how they do CPR, the paramedics, how they treat with medicines and manage the breathing. There's every patient who has a cardiac arrest, we review those cases and try to understand if and how we can do better. And I think that is the key point. That is what Leonard Cobb would say is, how can we get better? And that is the driving force. And part of the reason we did this evaluation is to understand where we're doing well, but importantly, where we can improve.
Well, let's say from 2015 to 2020, how did Medic One up its game? How did hospitals improve their initial care, creating a higher chance of survival from heart attacks through body temperature or other coronary care?
Yeah, so it's important to understand that there are a collection of treatments that are provided by different people, right? We talked about the layperson and their bystander CPR. We talk about law enforcement colleagues who bring an AED to the site. We talk about our fire departments that do expert CPR, the best CPR in the world, the way they compress the chest and breathe for the patient. And then our paramedics who deliver just the right dose of medicine. And then you mentioned the hospitals. The hospitals have the challenge of trying to understand exactly what the cause of that cardiac arrest was and reverse that cause, all the while supporting the patient. And one of the ways they support the patient is to keep them cool, prevent fever, because we know that that fever can sometimes accelerate cell damage and make it hard for the brain to recover. So all of these pieces kind of intertwine and come together, and it's that collection of steps that really has been the key for us getting better. Here, overall survival improved about 30%, relatively speaking, over the course of the 20 years of evaluation. I can credit every part of the chain of survival for that success. It really has been a team effort.
Is that your hope from this finding then, to wrap us up?
Yeah, I think we should be encouraged, right? Many people 20 years ago would have said, well, you all have reached your ceiling. You're not going to get any better. You're already a good system. Well, the system continued to make improvements and it did get better. And our hope is, you know, this will encourage us to continue to do that hard work and find ways to improve even more.
And the general public could do that by learning CPR and showing the willingness. I guess it's as easy as going to your local fire department and asking about their programs to train you, yes?
Yeah, I think there are many resources in the community. The Red Cross, the Medic One Foundation has a website, and they do training in the community. So I think there are many opportunities to get that training and to get more involved and certainly take action when you sense there's an emergency.
Our guest on Puget Sound Now today, Dr. Thomas Ray, professor with the University of Washington School of Medicine, and he is the medical director of King County Emergency Medical Services. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to have this important conversation with you. Be well.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity and for all the good work you do.
From Marysville to Seattle and Bellevue, local school districts are in financial crisis. Parents upset about possible school closures, program cuts, layoffs. A Tennessee woman who started a national movement says it makes local school board elections next month extremely important. Parents are demanding a better public education for their kids, especially families in underserved and low-income communities across the country. It's one reason the Memphis Lift movement is catching on. Memphis Lift is a nonprofit formed by 1,000 volunteers, grandparents, concerned family and community members. It began about 10 years ago. And speaking this week at the Washington Charter Schools Association Conference is the founder of Memphis Lift, the executive director, Sarah Carpenter. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Puget Sound Now.
Thank you for having me.
What education challenges did your own grandchildren face in Memphis, Tennessee, and did that get you started in this movement?
It really did. My oldest granddaughter, they said she's my favorite, but all of them my favorite. I got like 15 grandchildren, so all of them my favorite. But I knew something was wrong with the school system, and this new school was coming to our community, and I had to make people aware the best way I could, and that was before the Memphis Lift. And I stood in front of that school and told parents that was taking their kids in that school every day that they weren't teaching our kids how to read. It was a district school, of course, and I stood there and screamed. The police got called on me, but I still stood there. And every day, somebody new in the community would join me. Of course, I had to explain to them what was going on, because all they was looking at, is this the school my grandmama went to, I went to, my mom went to? I said, but they not teaching our kids how to read. And you probably can tell I got a big mouth, and I just yelled. I just yelled to parents, and I said, these people not listening to me. They still taking their kids in this school. And so the very next year, that school had to close, and the concept of the KIPP school was coming to our community.
Sarah, it sounds to me like your calls for improvements were falling on deaf ears.
Of course, I wanted something different. Kentoria, my oldest granddaughter, you hear her name a lot probably. She was going to fifth grade, and this school was starting at fifth grade. All I know that I wanted Kentoria to have a better opportunity. And with her grandmama and her big mouth, that school closed the next year, and Kentoria cut the ribbon to the first KIPP school in Memphis. So, and the rest is really history. She's the first in four generations to graduate from college. My screaming did a lot of good, I feel like, not just for Kentoria, other kids in this community. And I hit the ground. Of course, nobody won't change in Memphis anyway. I don't know about across the country, but nobody wants to see change, especially when their friends are doing these jobs and all that good stuff. So Kentoria went to KIPP, and I held KIPP accountable also. We got to learn how to hold everybody accountable who's teaching our children. Nobody get a pass when it comes to children in my mind.
As you said, you made good trouble. You yelled at them. But how did you make positive change and break that cycle and get this new school?
But first, you got to educate the parents. You got to educate the community also, because you don't have to worry about parents. You have to worry about community, too, because this school had been in this community for so long. All that don't matter to me. And you have to sit down and really explain to families that things not like they used to be, you know. So that's what I believe. You have to educate the community and the parents first. And we find out in our work that a lot of parents don't even know what's going on. We hold all kind of educational workshop for parents to let them know the landscape of education in this city.
And I hear what you're saying. A lot of parents just send their kids to schools and then they check out and they hope that the teachers, guide them through the day and through life. Quite often, yeah. the teacher unions, though, and the school boards, they hold all the power. They make the calls. How is your program giving the parents and the students a bigger voice at the table?
We let parents know we belong at the table. We the first one belong at the table. And we fight for teachers also, great teachers anyway. We fight for teachers also. We want our teachers to have what they need to teach our children. We educate our parents. And Bill, in Memphis, I find out, and across the country, everybody I talk to talking about school boards. School boards are really messing our school system up. I feel like I'm in the fight of my life right now. We want the state to come in and intervene in Memphis about the way things are going with our school system. You know, it's a mess here. It is a mess here.
Our guest on Puget Sound Now is Sarah Carpenter. She's the founder and executive director of Memphis Lift, a national movement for better public education system for our kids. And Sarah's the keynote speaker this week at the Washington Charter Schools Association conference near SeaTac. Those charter schools will be seeking more reliable funding from the Washington State Legislature. What are some of your core values in Memphis Lift? What's your mission?
Our mission is to make the powerless parent powerful. Our core values is busting barriers, love number one. I call love number one because you got to love the people to serve the people. You cannot serve the people if you don't love the people.
We have a general election coming up here in Washington State. I bet they have a vote in your state and city too. Why should voters pay attention to the people running for the school board and learn about their goals for the education system?
Because these people are going to be making decisions going to affect not only just a district. And I tell everybody, I don't care if you don't represent my district. School board members, when they vote, they need 9 votes in Memphis. And when you vote, you vote for my children, every child in this city and county. It's best to understand what they're running on and learn what they care about. I mean, if they don't care about what you care about, I wouldn't vote for these people. But parents don't know where their kids are reading level wise. And we fought to get the reading level on the report card. Exactly. Not knowing how to read, you got to fix the education system. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Sarah, Memphis Lift received some private grants, most notably from a woman who's here in Seattle, Mackenzie Scott, and her Yield Giving Foundation. She's, of course, the ex-wife of Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, and she's given out billions of dollars to nonprofits like yours. How did you apply for this? How did you receive the funding?
Bill, this is going to sound crazy, and I can talk about it now because it's over with. I was in ICU when I got that call. I had brain surgery, and I was in ICU when I got that call. And I don't know how they got our name, but I'm glad they got it. And we built a brand new facility right in the inner city, right around the corner from that school that I talked about, right in my own community. We built a million-dollar building in our community.
Let me ask you this. You're speaking to the Washington Charter School folks out here in the SeaTac area this week. What's your message about making change, speaking up, using your voice as you've done in Memphis?
Parents have got to raise their voice. I don't know much about Washington State. I've never even been to Washington State. But I know all across the country, parents got the power because guess what? We got the children. We got the children. That means we got the power. And parents got to raise their voice. And it's not about charter schools. It's not about district ran school. It's about great schools for every child, no matter what their zip code is.
Great schools for every child. That's a wonderful mission to have. How many cities are you in now with Memphis Lift?
Well, Memphis Lift started first, but we got Midland, Texas. We got a parent group down in Midland. We got a parent group, Parent Shield in Fort Worth, Texas. We got Propel in Nashville. And we got Cincinnati, a parent group in Cincinnati.
Sounds like it's catching on. She is the founder and the executive director of Memphis Lift, Sarah Carpenter, our guest on Puget Sound Now, wishing you safe travels out here. Thanks for all you're doing on behalf of children and education.
Thank you, Bill. It's a hard job, but somebody got to do it.
A new alliance supports Seattle's iconic Fifth Avenue Theater and allows performing artists to do what they do best. Here's Puget Sound Now's Lillian James.
Performing arts is something many people enjoy, whether you're the one performing or you're watching others. Luckily for us, local organizations are coming together to preserve the arts and local theaters. Today on Puget Sound Now, I am joined by Ileana Kervin, a performer working on the traveling production of Chicago. This is the first co-presentation between the Seattle Theater Group and the Fifth Avenue Theater Company. Talk to me about your role. What role do you play in Chicago?
I play Matron Mama Morton. She is the one of the ladies in the show that really gets the ball rolling for Roxy and also for Velma, who are, you know, in the jail needing a little assistance and trying to get out of the jail.
Awesome. And what do you love about this role? And also, what challenges does this role have?
Ooh, what I love about the role is just how much power she has. She's able to, you know, get Billy Flan, who's the top lawyer in Chicago at that time, to take on the girls. And she's a businesswoman. So she loves the girls, but she really likes to make a little money on the side. So it's like her little hustle.
Yes.
And what's different and what's challenging with the role is trying to stay lovable and likable when you're actually like very conniving and you don't really want to hurt them, but you want them to understand that this is what you're considering your job to do to make a little money.
That's such a good answer. I love that.
Thank you.
And so this is your third season in Chicago, right?
Yes, this is my third. I started, I did a replacement for the leg that went to Korea in 2023. So I've been with the production since May of 2023. My opening of the tour was actually in Seoul, Korea, which was really just amazing. So amazing.
That's awesome. What was that experience like?
Oh my gosh. It was really, it just was the best. I mean, I couldn't have, I'm a big K-pop fan and K-drama fan and just a music lover, you know, in general. And it was just so thrilling to just be there, be in that environment, you know, learn about the culture, you know, I was there to do a job, but it didn't feel like it. It really felt like a vacation. and to get to, you know, meet people and learn different things, see all of the villages and, you know, just amazing, experience the food, which was just incredible.
And this is the first presentation between two nonprofits, the Seattle Theater Group and the Fifth Avenue Theater Company.
How wonderful.
Yes, as part of their a new alliance between the two. How does having these types of nonprofit operations help performers such as yourself?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's just so, so amazing. The support that we feel, you know, from these organizations, just, I mean, it's just, it goes so deep, really. I don't know how, you know, we could do it without them. And I don't think we could. it's so important to keep that alive and to keep it thriving. And we're just always just so thankful because we know that we wouldn't be here without them. They do so much. They do so much for us. So much. People don't realize how much goes on behind the scenes, how much it takes to put these productions together and bring them to, you know, the different cities. And it just takes so many people, so much effort, so much love for the arts and for, you know, musical theater in general to just keep this going. So we're just really, really thankful because we want to be, you know, we want to be thriving. And the Chicago's been going on for a long time, and it's organizations like that actually keeps the ball rolling for us, and it's just beautiful. So I couldn't be more thankful.
Chicago will be in Seattle from now through November 2nd. That was performer Ileana Kervin. I'm Lillian James on Puget Sound Now.
Next Friday is Halloween. As you shop for candy corn, apples, and pumpkins to hand out to little ghosts and goblins, don't forget the eats and treats for our four-legged friends. Dog treats, cat toys. Wait a minute. Pet food supplies? They're not part of Halloween goodies, are they? Yes, they are, thanks to QFC's Howl-Loween Pet Food Drive to support local animal shelters. And stopping by Puget Sound now with all the details, Tiffany Sanders, Corporate Affairs Manager for QFC, and like me, a proud graduate of Washington State University. Go Cougs!
That's right!
Tiffany, great to have you on the program again. As we've outlined on Puget Sound now many times over the past few years, QFC is dedicated to reaching zero hunger in our communities. How does this Halloween campaign do that for people and their pets?
Right. Well, you know, our associates inside our QFC stores are so passionate about really trying to have a positive impact in the communities where our stores are. And a lot of that is making sure everyone has access to food, whether it be through groceries, but also through their food banks, their local food banks and donations. But we've realized over the last few years, not only is the need growing for people needing access to food, but also their pets. And so this really was a no-brainer to partner up with a lot of the local animal shelters, with our local QFCs, and give our wonderfully generous customers a chance to donate.
As we found out on our program and through a lot of stories, a lot of human beings are forced to make tough calls about feeding themselves or feeding their dogs and cats. Tell us how QFC customers can help reduce that situation.
Yeah, so during the month of October, so we've only got a few days left here, we have partnered every single QFC location with their local pet shelter. And what that means is that the shelter has brought a barrel into the front end where our customers can pick up an extra can of dog or cat food or pick up some toys or some treats and purchase those and put those in that bin. And then the volunteers from that local shelter, they're picking up those items several days a week and getting those back to the shelter to make sure that local pets have the food they need. So it could not be any easier than just putting an extra item in your basket when you are going to check out at your local QFC.
Whether it's Tacoma Humane or Animal Services of King County, we featured a lot of those programs and organizations on our show throughout Western Washington. And you have a big reach, right? 54 stores throughout the region?
Yeah, that's right. We have got stores all across Western Washington. We've got a store out in Squim, and I'll tell you what, we have partnered them up with their local shelter. We've got stores down in Portland, Oregon, and we've partnered them up as well. So every single QFC, it doesn't matter which one you choose to shop at, you have the opportunity really to make a difference in the lives of some hungry pets in your neighborhood.
All the way in Squim. Hello to our listeners in the Olympic Peninsula. Jen Roars is the volunteer manager at Posado Safe Haven. And she says, as the weather gets colder and wetter, I should say, Tiffany, the need for supplies is greater. Do you see that at QFC stores as well?
Yes, definitely. I'll tell you, the holidays are always a time that we're thinking about maybe our neighbors that need a little extra help and some food and maybe even toys or a warm coat and some gloves during the holiday season. But also, we need to be thinking about the pets as well. And so that's why it really made sense. We've got food drives going on at all of our QFCs during the holidays, but we really felt like October was a good time to focus on pets. And so it's been a wonderful partnership with our local animal shelters and making sure that we can help where it's needed.
Okay, one more time now. You're going to have the bin set up. It starts now through October 31st in the front of the QFC stores. And how physically do shoppers make that happen and put it in there?
Yeah, so it's really simple. Those bins are there even as we speak right now. They've been there for several weeks and we have volunteers picking up the items. So don't worry about it sitting there for too long because it's going to get to the pet who needs it. All you need to do is you're doing your shopping. Make sure you head down the pet food aisle and you can just grab an item that looks good to you, maybe in your price point that you think you can afford. You head through the checkout and as soon as you head through the checkout, you'll put it in the bin. It'll be on the other side of the registers and it'll be clearly marked with signage and some pictures there. And we will make sure that it gets to the local pets that need it.
Does any part of this campaign involve a monetary donation, or should they just do that with their local shelter or pet food place?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, Bill. I think that if you would like to put a little check or a little money behind some of these donations, all you need to do is go online to your favorite shelter, and you can do that quite easily. Or you're always, you know, they're always welcome to drop that off at their local shelter as well.
A scary time for trick-or-treaters, but we can make it rewarding, too, for those furry friends out there through the Halloween Pet Food Drive. Many thanks to Tiffany Sanders, the Corporate Affairs Manager for QFC, and happy Halloween.
Thank you so much. You too, Bill.
I'm Bill Swartz. A big thanks to our guests. We're back again next weekend.
Thank you for listening to Puget Sound Now, a closer look at the people and issues across our community. Listen for new episodes every weekend and download full episodes at nwnewsradio.com or wherever you get your podcast. Puget Sound Now is a public service of Lotus Seattle Corp and is a production of Northwest News Radio, 97.7 AM 1000.